And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
You know, I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What?
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ. We're positive talk radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is looking backward, looking forward. Each of my three guests is either looking backwards to give us some perspective on events or looking forward to the future. My first guest is the dean of the Robertson School of Government in Virginia. We reviewed the top political stories of 2010. My second guest is the news director for Alabama Public Radio in charge of NASA and space exploration. We discussed NASA's future and the reasons to go to Mars. My next guest is an accidental musicologist. He was not a fan of rock and roll or what he believed rock and roll represented to our culture. We're going to discuss my guest's personal journey to discover more about Buddy Holly, Buddy's music, his influence, and the times in which he lived. If you're a Buddy Holly fan or if you want to join the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Gary W. Moore is known as an inspirational and motivational speaker. He's a successful entrepreneur and accomplished musician himself and an award-winning author. Gary's latest book is titled Hey Buddy, In Pursuit of Buddy Holly, My New Buddy John, and My Lost Decade of Music. He also wrote Playing with the Enemy, the story of his father's life in baseball and in war, and that book is soon to become a major motion picture. Gary's a contributing edit author to the best-selling Chicken Soup series of books, and he's been featured in publications like Entrepreneur Magazine, Selling Power, Sales and Marketing Management. He's been on CNN, CNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, you name it, he has been there. He's the recipient of the prestigious Sam Walton Leadership Award, and because of his unique speaking and writing style, he's become known as America's Storyteller. So, Gary, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for being on the show, because you're really going to talk about an area of music that I myself don't know too much about. So let's start with how you came to write the book. You were born in 1954, which you're squarely in the baby boom generation, yet you were oblivious, really, to Buddy Holly's music, and in fact, you weren't interested in rock and roll at all. So give us some background of why you weren't interested in rock and roll, Buddy Holly, but what drew you to write this book?
Well, you know, I was born in 54, so I was only 4 years old when Buddy Holly died. And Buddy, because of the, the British invasion of rock and roll, he was buried very, very quickly. Even though the Brits were, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, had really captured Buddy's style, were recording a lot of his music, mm-hmm. most Americans didn't recognize it and thought it was something uniquely British. And so Buddy Holly, until 1970, was really kind of lost. I'd never really heard of Buddy Holly, didn't know much about his music, but I also didn't like rock and roll. I grew up in a drum and bugle corps, was run by the VFW and American Legion, a very, very patriotic type organization, and most of the veterans that were around this did not like, did not condone, did not appreciate, didn't understand the new music that was kind of sweeping the nation, and more importantly, they didn't like the attitude of the music.
I see.
And so I shied away from it, didn't pay any attention to it, and spent my time in drum and bugle corps, then got a degree in music education, which was mostly classical and symphonic music. And so there was an entire decade of music that really just kind of slipped past me until I was introduced to Buddy Holly by a Buddy Holly impersonator in Iowa.
Well, tell us about that story, because it's actually a fascinating story. His name is John Mueller. How did you find about John Mueller? How did he spark your interest in Buddy Holly?
Well, John Mueller has been traveling in kind of, and I shouldn't say impersonating, he's an actor and an incredible musician, and he's been really interpreting Buddy Holly for about 15 years. He originally started in the Buddy Holly Story stage play in Kansas City, and he now travels under the Winter Dance Party moniker with the Big Bopper's real-life son and a young man who interprets Ritchie Valens. And they recreate the final concert at the Surf Ballroom in Iowa, and they take the show around the country. Well, my mother-in-law, who's probably the sweetest human being you'd ever meet, kind of a June Cleaver type of woman, asked for her 77th birthday, she wanted to go see this Winter Dance Party. And I assumed Winter Dance Party was Tommy Dorsey or something like that. When I found out it was rock and roll and Buddy Holly, I was just blown away. I mean, you live around this woman most of your life, and then all of a sudden you find out she's a rock and roller, and it was quite a shock.
Well, there you go.
So we went to the Winter Dance Party concert in Iowa, And I was hearing really a lot of this music for the first time. Some of it I was hearing, I didn't realize, I'd heard it performed by other artists, didn't realize it was Buddy Holly's. But it wasn't until the end of the show that John Mueller told about his background with Buddy and said he'd written a song about Buddy. And Bill, quite frankly, I thought it'd be a train wreck, because I thought, well, here we've heard this beautiful evening of real, I guess, authentic Buddy Holly music, and now this guy who I, at the time, I viewed as an impersonator is going to try to throw in a song that he's written. But he played a song called Hey Buddy, which was one of the most moving pieces of music. When you listen to the words and you understand he's actually singing to this man he's been impersonating for, you know, 15 years. And it just captivated my heart, my imagination, and sent me on a search to learn more.
And hence the name of your book, Hey Buddy, In Pursuit of Buddy Holly, My New Buddy John, and My Lost Decade of Music. We're talking to Gary Moore, everybody. Gary, I want to ask you to step back, because you are classically trained in music. You've got a degree in that. Tell us, what is the enduring fascination with Buddy Holly? What's been his impact on society and on music?
Well, it's profound. When you really look at what has happened. Buddy's music was very, very simple. But it was also very diverse. When you look at the Beatles' early music, the Rolling Stones' early music, it's all very, very similar, same style, same beat, same chords, usually the same key. Buddy didn't record two songs that were alike, and it was really a vast display of his musical ability and understanding of music. The fact that it was simple, I think, is a credit to his genius, because there's nothing in the analysis of genius that requires, complexity. So Buddy was able to do great things with music that has been recorded over and over and over again by countless artists, Linda Ronstadt, the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, you know, through the years. And still, today, you can't get away from them. I mean, you turn on the History Channel, and they use Every Day in one of their commercials, and of course, Sprint BlackBerry uses Every Day. So his music just keeps going. But I think most importantly, it's what we lost when Buddy died. Buddy was not a rock and roller in the sense that the 60s rock and roll. I mean, Buddy didn't commit suicide, didn't die of a drug overdose, didn't choke to death on his own vomit in the backseat of an Italian sports car. He wasn't a party all night kind of guy. Buddy was a family man. He didn't drink. He didn't believe in drugs. He tithed his earnings. 10% of every dime that Buddy Holly earned went to his church. With his first royalty check, he bought pews for his church. And the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, with the Hollies, when you look at all the groups that claim that they were impacted and followed Buddy until his death, once Buddy died, they went off in their own direction, and most of it wasn't positive. So I think that the enduring, in looking forward in the spirit of your show, what could have been, you know, Buddy Holly with his attitude, with his values, might have dramatically and profoundly impacted the direction of the 60s to be different than it ended up being.
That's an interesting thought, and that's something we may try to explore a little bit later in the conversation. But I want to return back to Buddy Holly, if I can, for just
yes.
a minute, Gary. And February 3rd is coming, and it's right around the corner. That is the 52nd anniversary of the day the music died,
right.
According to Don McLean. And that's when the plane crashed in Iowa. We lost Buddy Holly. We lost the Big Bopper. We lost Ritchie Valens. Now, you've done extensive research for your book on this crash, and you've actually uncovered some new details about the crash that haven't come to light before. So shed some light on this for us. What did you learn in your investigation of Buddy Holly's plane crash?
I did not plan on making the plane crash part of this book, other than just superficially talk about the fact that this is the history and he died. My book was intended, and largely is still, an analysis of his enduring impact. Well, one of the people that was impacted were the Barb and Jerry Dwyer, who owned the flying service that crashed, that owned the plane that crashed. So I contacted Jerry. I couldn't reach him. He wouldn't talk to me. But his wife called me back one day and said two things that really shocked me. First thing she said is the CAB report, which at the time was the Civil Aeronautics Board, which is today's NTSB.
Mm-hmm.
She said, the report is wrong. The truth has never been told. We know the truth. And just very defensively crying that they were wronged by the analysis of the CAB, and they had proof. Well, then she also, and I asked her, I said, well, what was Buddy Holly's impact in your life? And she says, I'll tell you what Buddy Holly's impact was. Buddy Holly ruined our lives.
Wow.
And I can understand this 80-plus-year-old woman who is probably, the family's been hounded for years about the cause of this crash and what could have been different, and they owned the plane, the crash. But when she very defiantly and over told me the truth has never been told, I contacted the NTSB, and they connected me with one of their most experienced, retired now, accident investigators, and we did a complete analysis of that crash and what happened. And we believe the truth has been told, but we have a different look at it. We think that we can conclusively prove that the normal belief of how that plane and why that plane went down is wrong.
All right. Well, now, the story behind it is you had an inexperienced pilot there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an urban myth that Buddy Holly was packing a weapon and that they may have somehow or another been involved in the crash. So
right.
What did you discover? Tell us what's new about your discoveries.
Well, it's not an urban myth. Buddy had a handgun. You know, Buddy was a Texan and carried a gun. But the gun had nothing to do with the accident. I mean, the urban myth has been that the pilot was shot and that somehow Buddy either shot him on purpose or accidentally shot him, you know, that he was cleaning his gun. And that myth comes from the fact that the handgun was actually found at the crash site a few months after the crash, and the farmer who found it picked it up and shot it to see if it worked, which is a crazy thing to do, to pick a gun out of the mud and just pull the trigger, but he did. Then he took it to the police and said that he found the gun. Well, the police looked at it and said, wait a minute, there's a spent cartridge here. Well, the farmer later said, oh, no, I did that. So none of the cartridges were spent until I shot it. But that triggered this conversation that just kind of flew through the world that the pilot had been shot, and that was the reason for the crash. Well, autopsies prove that there were no bullets in any of the passengers and certainly not in the pilot. And so that's just a myth. I mean, the fact of the crash is very simple. It was a 22-year-old pilot flying a high-performance airplane. It's a pilot who had failed just a few weeks before. His instrument rating did not have an instrument rating, and he was put in zero visibility instrument conditions. And the plane, because of its natural tendency to roll to the right, ended up rolling when the pilot didn't have a horizon he could see. It put it into what they call a graveyard spiral, and it struck the ground at 170 miles per hour. In a 90-degree bank with the wings straight up and down, and it cartwheeled and turned itself into a little ball of aluminum and killed everybody involved.
Oh, my goodness. We're talking to Gary W. Moore, everybody, author of the book, Hey Buddy, My Pursuit of Buddy Holly, My New Buddy John, and My Lost Decade of Music. So things pretty much happened the way that the investigation said that they happened at the time of the crash itself. But and obviously the impact has been profound on the world, as well as Barb and Jerry Dwyer. But what new evidence did you develop out of all of this?
Well, here's what we have, and maybe I kind of misled you just a little bit. The crash did not happen as the CAB reported. The reasons for the crash, the inexperienced pilot, high performance airplane, are as the CAB reported. The CAB pointed to, and it was just conjecture, that maybe the pilot was misreading the artificial horizon, and the pilot accidentally flew to the plane to the ground because he thought he was at the right altitude. Well, we've proven that that's not the case by the crash angle, the degree of bank, and so that is absolutely the CAB really dropped the ball and missed on that one point.
Gotcha.
It doesn't change anything.
No, it doesn't.
It's still because of pilot error, you know.
All right, that clarifies some things, Gary. I appreciate it. And very interesting story. Your book, Hey Buddy, if people wanted to learn more about the crash, learn more about Buddy Holly, what you've written, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, the book debuts January 20th, and it'll be at bookstores nationwide. They can pre-order a copy from Amazon.com, or there's one of the oldest bookstores in the nation in Chicago, Anderson's Bookshops.com. You can go there and order a signed copy, and it'll be shipped on the 20th. But I think that I think that people will really, you know, the people who are Buddy Holly fans, I think, will appreciate some of the new information about Buddy in the book. And those who aren't, it's an opportunity to learn who this young man who was. It's forever frozen in time as a 22-year-old inventor of rock and roll.
Well said, and it is a good book. Gary, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you. That brings us to the end of another show. We're going to go out with Buddy Holly. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, Gary. I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue. Oh, how my heart yearns for you. Oh, Peggy, my Peggy Sue. Oh, well, I love you, Gary. I love you, Peggy Sue. I need you.